During a projection, Ram embraced his material body, found it warm and without muscular rigidity. He also observed the cord, which apparently can be elongated indefinitely and which ends on the whole surface of the double with thousands of very fine threads. Spirit helpers or guides are seldom seen. During a projection, he could see a friend, already passed over, and had a long conversation with him. When projected into the spirit world, Ram was sometimes attacked by lower spirits. As a protection, he found the radiation of a thought of love to be the most powerful defense. The best time to experiment is between 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, after a few hours' sleep, when there is less interference from the subconscious. He was able to produce several projections in one night, returning to the body after the first to take pencil notes, then projecting again with renewed strength. Sometimes he could take his wife with him in his astral travels. He considers himself an initiate because of his familiarity with meditation and his astral projections, connected with his experiences in higher spheres, of which, however, he only speaks in generalities without giving details of the spirit world. The experiences of Mrs. C. D. Larson. Mrs. Caroline D. Larson is the only lady I know of who published a book on her experiences in this field. Apparently, she underwent no special training to attain astral projection, though we would like to know more about this and her previous knowledge of psychic matters. Her first projection seemingly was quite spontaneous and happened in autumn, 1910. Footnote to this. In Professor H. Hart's book, mentioned later, the date is given as autumn, 1918, and the following details are disclosed, page 226. Mrs. Caroline D. Larson was the wife of Professor Alfred Larson, who taught violin at Middlebury College in Vermont. He was sufficiently distinguished to be listed in Who's Who in America. In her own right, Mrs. Larson had previously published a book of stories in the Danish language. End footnote, and continues. At that time she was a middle-aged, grey-haired lady, had retired early, when suddenly feeling a deep oppression and apprehension, not unlike that which precedes a fainting spell. A numbness crept over her until every muscle became paralyzed. She lost consciousness for some moments, then found herself standing on the floor, looking at her pale and death-like body lying in bed. Walking into the bathroom, she saw herself in the mirror with a changed appearance, younger and more beautiful, dressed in a lovely white shining garment. Though standing in the bathroom, she could clearly see her husband and three other men, through all the intervening material barriers, rehearsing a quartet downstairs, and could hear the music. Wanting to go downstairs, she met a female spirit ordering her back into her body. She united with it while conscious, and with a gasp and a start woke up in it. She says, "This was my first experience out of the body. But since then I have often been accorded this privilege. I have traveled far and wide in space, visited heavenly bodies, visited many parts of the spirit world where I have seen and heard things which I believe have never been given to the world." In her astral visits she was always accompanied by a guide, always the same individual, dressed somewhat in the fashion of the Roman nobles, who called her Carolo for Caroline. In comparing her interesting accounts with Mr. Sculthorpe's experiences, we find general agreement but not duplication. Her narrative rather gives additional information, especially regarding the Earth sphere and outer space. The largest part of her book is concerned with the Earth plane. She met spirits of persons she knew on Earth but had passed over, and also acquaintances who had recently died but did not realize their true situation. Interesting scenes are described when spirits, having died long ago, still intermingle with the living or with those recently passed over. She also saw many spirit helpers in action. After thus witnessing spirit life on Earth, Mrs. Larson visited several higher spheres. The first sphere she describes as a kind of clearinghouse for the newly arrived, and relates details in agreement with Mr. Sculthorpe's report on the normal states. In what she calls the second spirit plane, there are no earth-bound souls and all are working for higher attainments with many spirit helpers to teach and assist. The third and the fourth sphere were separated from the lower ones by endless voids of darkness, and their glory cannot be adequately described in worldly speech. Their inhabitants were highly perfected spirits. She also visited the land of spirit children and witnessed a concert given by a huge orchestra. The music was so overwhelming in majesty and emotional appeal that she could not endure it. Finally, she describes a visit to the abyss of space outside the solar system and marveled at the countless living beings that fill the universe. These spirits of high superiority emanated a white light of intense power, which enveloped them in a flaming radiance that varied in intensity in proportion to their spiritual power. These few remarks must suffice to show the general character of this important contribution to our subject, which is in fact a corroboration of Mr. Skelthorpe's report. Next headline, The Experiences of Mr. Sylvan Muldoon. Mr. Muldoon had his first projection at the age of 12 and it was a conscious one from start to finish, which kind is very rare. When writing the book, he had had hundreds of exteriorization and excursions, most of which started with a dream of knowledge. Like others, he insists on the convincing power of a projection, which turns anybody into a firm believer in immortality. While he occasionally met a spirit during his projections, the latter were confined to the Earth sphere. The theories which he advances deserve the closest consideration but cannot be dealt with adequately in a few lines here. Conscious living, he thinks, consumes some sort of astral power and sleep is necessary to replenish that power, which is done by means of a small dislocation of the astral body. Therefore, during an illness, astral projection is more likely to occur spontaneously. Sleepwalking in the material body is said to have its counterpart in sleepwalking of the astral body. In a normal projection, with the material body lying on its back in bed, the astral body moves upwards for several feet, is then pushed over into a vertical position, landing on the floor, where, owing to the action of the cord, it sways back and forth several times, before it comes out of a kind of cataleptic state and becomes free. He distinguishes the cord activity range within some 6 to 18 feet from the physical body, depending on health and other conditions, when the cord has a diameter of 1.5 inches. Beyond the distance mentioned, the cord appears as a thin thread of whitish-gray color and then the astral body is free to move to great distances. In view of Derville's findings, the peculiarities of cord activity range must be ascribed to the participation of the etheric body, outside this range to the astral body. The sometimes disagreeable sensation of coming back into the physical body is explained by assuming that the astral body is in a cataleptic state when near the material body and that it transmits itself onto the muscles with a jolt. This interiorization may take three forms: a. A spiral fall, b. A straight fall, or c. A slow vibratory fall. The latter is the most agreeable. These varieties are thought to be the result of two forces: 1, the pull of the cord; 2, a kind of gravitational force acting upon the astral. If the gravitational force is relatively strong, we get the straight fall; if weak, the spiral fall; if just balanced, the vibratory fall. These three varieties may also be observed at the beginning of a projection. If the cataleptic state be observed preceding a projection and there is ability to move, it should be taken calmly and a suggestion be made to project. The control of emotions is essential. Muldoon thinks the vibrations of the astral are quickened when projected, otherwise it would be difficult to understand why it can pass right through the body of a living person, which also contains an astral body. Within cord activity range, curious experiences of dual vision and apparent dual consciousness are possible, when one may see the phantom as with the physical eyes. The cord leaves the double at the back of the head and reaches the physical body at the front, side or back of the head. Other points of contact, for example the solar plexus, were not observed. Around the solar plexus, neuric energy is seen to be concentrated. It is luminous, like white light, and gives the astral body its phosphorescent appearance. Muldoon postulates a crypto-conscious or superconscious mind, responsible for projection. Whether conscious or unconscious, it can be influenced by the subconscious, can accept suggestions from the conscious mind and also act on a stress-off habit. Instructions are given, based on such principles, on how to bring about a projection. Once, on touching an electrically live wire in the street, Muldoon was nearly electrocuted and had a conscious projection as a result of this horrible accident. Thereafter he dreamt the same scene many times, often combined with projection in his room and once even on the very spot of the occurrence, which was several blocks away from his house. These observations shed some light on hauntings, when a scene of violent death seems to be reenacted. This could be explained by dreams of the spirits in the astral. Next headline, modern investigations. These studies are now gradually being taken up by university professors. As a first step, the Society for Psychical Research in London, founded 1882, collected well-authenticated cases of apparitions of the living and the dead. Due to the materialistic philosophy prevailing in university quarters, all apparitions were regarded as hallucinations of one kind or another. During the last years, Professor Hornellhart has courageously undertaken to study the cases of astral projection, or ESP projection as he prefers to call the phenomenon. In his book The Enigma of Survival, 1959, he has pointed out the importance of ESP projection in connection with the problem of survival. Professor Hart asked 155 students and 42 or 27% of them reported having had out-of-body experiences. He believes that more than 70% of those who have the experience once will have it several times. All this shows that the experience is not a rare occurrence. Together with his collaborators, Professor Hart collected 288 evidential cases, of which he retained 99. In which the agent reported the details or took action before the evidence was received. These cases he summarized in 5 tables with the following headings: hypnotic ESP projection, 20 cases, projecting one's own apparition by mere concentration, 15 cases, self-projection by more complex methods, 12 cases, spontaneous apparitions of the living, corresponding with concentration of attention, dreams or visions on the part of the projectionist, 30 cases, other evidential spontaneous projections, 22 cases. It is seen from this classification that hypnotic experiments have been reported. The difficulty is to obtain evidential results. The technique of hypnosis is quite different from mesmerism, and it is conceivable that mesmerism was better suited for this kind of investigation. Probably the technique is of secondary importance provided suitable sensitive subjects are available. Also, it is seen that in a number of cases evidential self-projection was possible, thus a number of persons were able to develop the necessary technique. Some interesting hypnotic experiments were reported by Stavely Bulford in his book Man's Unknown Journey, 1943. He had 2 good and sensitive subjects and succeeded in sending them to various places on Earth and even to the spirit world, where they met each other and made identical reports of their experiences afterwards. Unfortunately, the author does not give much detail. He claims to have developed conscious self-projection himself, and he describes the process as essentially an auto-suggestion. He is probably right in stressing the importance of preparing a plan and rehearsing the pertinent auto-suggestion to carry it out successfully. The book of Stavely Bulford is thought-provoking as he also attacks the problem of different minds. Following in the path of Kilner and others, he claims that the odic emanation of fingers can be made visible by ultraviolet light in a dark room. Next headline, spiritualistic consequences. If a projected person is in a similar condition as the spirit of a deceased person, corresponding observations should have been reported. Indeed, a large variety of cases are on record. It has been explained above that hauntings may be produced unknowingly by the doubles of the living. Reports of projectionists having met the spirits of deceased persons or having been helped by spirits have also been mentioned. Since the beginning of modern spiritualism, 1848, communications from the living as well as from the dead have been received by all means used, such as table tilting, rappings, Ouija board, automatic writing and through mediums in trance. Characteristic cases may be found in Aksakow's book Animism and Spiritism, 1895, some spontaneous, some experimental. Also with spirit photography, the doubles of the living have been photographed, usually to the greatest surprise of the people involved. But the doubles of living persons have also manifested through physical mediumship. Among earlier cases we might consider the Davenport brothers, whose telekinetic phenomena were said to be produced by their own doubles. In 1876 a plaster cast was obtained of the materialized foot of the medium Eglinton's double. As regards direct voice and complete materialization, there is the interesting case investigated by Mr. Desvaraux, cited from Professor Montandon's book Forms Material I See, concerning the medium Mrs. Mary C. Vlasek in Los Angeles. Mrs. Vlasek had the gift of projecting at will. In 1926, during a trip to Toledo, Ohio, she succeeded in projecting her double from the moving train on two successive evenings. On the first evening she was able to manifest in a direct voice circle and to say a few words through the trumpet. On the second evening, visiting in her double a materialization seance, she fully materialized with the aid of the spirits and spoke to the sitters, her friends, who were in a position to establish her identity beyond doubt. Most mediums experience astral projections at least occasionally. Among living mediums I might cite the American Arthur Ford, who published an account of his excursion to the spirit world which lasted a fortnight, during which time his body was in a state of lethargy in a hospital. Further, Ina Nielsen, the Danish materialization medium, who published instances when he remembered excursions while his material body was active as a trance medium in a spiritualist service, a circumstance theoretically interesting. Recently the English medium Bertha Harris also published an account of her excursions whilst in hospital. I personally know a trance medium who clearly remembered his visit to some astral sphere while his body was in a trance, being used by a spirit. On another occasion he was conscious in his astral body, standing in the room where the seance was held, when the controlling spirit in the medium's body walked around from one sitter to the next. The medium remembered seeing the spirit walking around but could not see his own material body taking part. Next headline, regarding a theory. The observations mentioned show that the projected astral bodies of different persons are not necessarily in the same condition, as some see their physical body, some do not, some see the cord, some do not, some see spirits, some do not. It is as if the change of vibration of the astral body projecting was different for different persons, with corresponding changes in the possibility of clairvoyant vision. This fact has to be kept in mind when comparing details of the reports given by various projectionists. As a working hypothesis, we should distinguish at least four parts or four bodies: physical, etheric, astral and mental, each has a cord. The physical cord is cut off at birth. The etheric body has a cord the thickness of which is about 1 inch. The astral body has a cord as thin as a spider's thread. Of the cord of the mental body no details are known. The mental body, though sometimes seen as a luminous ball, takes the form of the projectionist's body at least under certain conditions. Mr. Sculthorpe, p. 97, as well as Mrs. Yu, p. 130, have observed it, and several reports of spontaneous cases mention similar observations. Indeed, such a split is often observed but may not last long, and seems so strange that this detail is not always mentioned in a report. I believe the etheric body to be responsible for, or to participate in, occurrences when physical effects are accomplished or when the apparition is lifelike and seen by everybody, especially in the bilocation. As a rule, the material body will then be in deep lethargy. Activity of the material body at the same moment seems to be rather rare. The peculiarities of cord activity range are also due to the etheric body participating. I suggest the distinctive use of the terms exteriorization, equals cord activity range, and excursion, outside this range. The problem of consciousness and memory seems to be rather complex too. consciousness may be a quality of the highest spiritual principle, the divine spark, and thus may be continuous, only we do not know it, unless it is connected with some kind of memory. We may assume each one of the four bodies to have a memory of a corresponding kind, with interconnections which are not always operating. Sections of each memory may remain subconscious, as instinct and memories of former lives, assuming reincarnation to be a fact. Such ideas of a preliminary character appear to be consistent with observed facts. Each memory may be endowed with a partial or subsidiary consciousness which is governed by the central consciousness. This might explain true bilocation, activity in two places, because the extraordinary speed of thought, CP 75 in original book, would make such a feat possible. Regarding photographs of doubles, either accidentally or experimentally obtained, some results are reproduced in the book by the French researcher Gabriel Lillan, Les apparitions matérialisées des vivants et des morts, Materialized Apparitions of the Living and the Dead, published 1909. I believe that by using infrared photography, better and more consistent results might be obtained. There have been so many reports of spontaneous and experimental cases that I cannot hope to have mentioned all of the many aspects of astral projection. Also, the possibility of artificially produced exteriorizations by the use of drugs and special incense has not been discussed here. To advance research in this field, a comprehensive survey should be written, more spontaneous cases be investigated and more experimental work carried out. Next headline, conclusion. For every individual having experienced an astral projection, the overwhelming sensation of being freed of one's material body brings about a conviction of immortality, henceforth never to be shaken. This shows the importance of spiritual development, either by means of a spiritualist's development circle or by meditation and other exercises, together with the application of spiritual principles in daily life. This being the subjective side, we also have the other, the objective side, represented by experimental investigation. Combining the two, we have what Duprel had in mind when he maintained that the wharf of survival could be established by a study of the living man. I feel certain that from this aspect of psychic science much light will finally be shed on the complex nature of man, and a better understanding of many phenomena will be gained. To the spiritualist, all scientific knowledge is but a means to an end, the end being a step forward in the spiritual development of mankind. Indeed, our planet has become smaller as a result of modern transportation facilities, and politics as well as international commerce show a worldwide interconnection. But the spiritual side of life lags behind, because a large part of humanity is not aware of the independent reality of spirit. Another large part clings to the dogmatic ideas of several historical religions, a circumstance which divides mankind instead of uniting it. Alone, the results already established in the vast field of psychic science seem capable of overcoming the inconsistencies and contradictions of historic religions, and thus can lay the secure foundations of world peace. Spiritualism has not only proved survival to innumerable individuals, it is at the same time the only field of experience where true knowledge of the nature of man and his life after death can be found in a general way. A more detailed knowledge is gradually building up for the scientifically minded person. Seen in this perspective, I am glad the present report of Mr. F. C. Sculthorpe is made available to the public at large, as it contributes new knowledge and also adds considerable detail to other already known facts. It is this wealth of detail which makes his narrative so exceedingly interesting. May this little survey help to stress the importance and universal character of all endeavors in this field. The end. An audio is made of this book.